This is the Closing Market Report. It's the 10th day of June. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. The markets were a bit higher today. We'll have more in just a moment with Susan Stroud. Susan Stroud is now here. She's with No Bull. Hey, thanks much for being with us at NoBull.com. Susan, we appreciate you taking some time with me today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Give me your assessment of the corn and soybean markets as we move through the month of June, please.
Well, it's been a brutal start, to say the least. I think maybe finally today it seems like we're trying to find a bottom. We had mostly green on the screen for the first time in several days. So, I mean, the problem is, you know, June really is historically not necessarily the most friendliest of months to row crops. And a lot of the problem is that we see planting, you know, planting's progressed enough, conditions are okay to start with, and the market's kind of realizing that weather for June doesn't look terribly threatening, and then bam, before you know it, we're past the seasonal highs and new crop, and the crop is made. And I think that that's kind of what the market's been struggling with. I think the other piece of it too is the conflict hopefully coming to an end, or maybe at some point looks like there's a resolution on the horizon, although today it doesn't necessarily feel like that. And then you have to consider, especially for the corn market, with Brazil and Argentina further along, but both of them with huge corn crops. Argentina should be a record corn crop and record exports. And so that presents quite the headwind for U.S. futures.
So when you look at the marketplace and think about where we are today and how particularly the soybean market has bounced, corn following along to some extent, I suppose in part because of the turmoil in the Mideast, the possibility that the Trump administration may turn again to heavier bombing of Iran. How do you put that into context with what you think might be the lower end of this market, which we may or may not have already reached?
Yeah, I don't. It's difficult because when you think about conflict, and you can even kind of, there are a lot of ways that it parallels between actual physical war and then like trade war, for instance. You know, you have the initial shock, and the market has these really wild swings, and it's trying to figure out where does it need to be given the chaos. And eventually, the chaos is still there, but the market's reaction to it kind of slowly dies off, or it dials back a little bit. And it almost becomes more of a hindrance than anything, because it's impossible to trade. You have this back and forth rhetoric. And so even though I feel like we've tried, or the market's desperately trying to inject a little risk premium back into things, like in the energy markets, and then you see that stocks have sold off relatively hard today. All in all, the market's very tired of what's happening in the Middle East and just trying to determine where we go from here. When you look at what ag commodities did today or have done in the past several weeks, we've detached almost entirely from the energy story. Now, while energies in general have been moving lower as we're hopefully inching towards some sort of ceasefire into this mess with Iran, at the same time, you have commodities have faced the headwind of non-threatening weather, the realization that China's probably not coming to the table again for old crop U.S. bean purchases. Also, the fact that it's near mid-June and we don't have any new crop commitments from them on the books yet either. So just a combination of several different things has kind of left the path of least resistance has been lower.
When you look forward, I'm wondering, because I know you follow the biofuels area very closely, SAF, biomass-based diesel fuel, renewable diesel, ethanol as SAF as well. Do you see that fundamentally changing the corn and or soybean market?
Let's talk corn first. So with corn, 45Z, the amendments that took effect the beginning of 2026, that was a big deal for corn ethanol margins. It's really helped support that margin structure and encourage U.S. ethanol producers to continue producing at near max capacity or the top end of things. Now, when you look at biomass-based diesels, one, 45Z provided a tremendous amount of support, especially when compared with what we saw in 2025 in the original 45Z framework that was penalizing crop-based feedstocks and the resulting biofuels. This year, though, that's changed quite a bit. So you have canola oil that's back in the mix. You have fuels produced from soybean oil, that biodiesel and renewable diesel both, those fuels are getting 2 to 3 times the subsidy amount that they had beginning under the original framework. So that's that was already a really big boost for demand for feedstocks to start 2026. And now we officially know the RVO for 26 and 27. And that's a thing that's really adding additional fundamental support, because we need all of the feedstocks we can to produce fuels, enough fuels to meet those obligations.
I do want to take time as we wrap up our discussion together to look forward to the end of the month of July. I believe this is your third, maybe fourth annual event to be held in St. Louis for the AgriNext conference, a very good conference. Producers from the whole of the Midwest can come in, go to a Cub card game if they're a fan, I think.
Yeah.
And they'll see all kinds of great folks in the process. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
This year is a little different. It's presented not only by Noble Ag, but Bloomberg as well. And so we have several key members of Bloomberg and Bloomberg Intelligence, their teams, that will be there helping facilitate and moderate the discussions. The theme is inflection point, policy, trade, and the forces reshaping ag. So some things that we're working on, or you can expect in the agenda. One, we're going to touch on kind of the macro situation and how we're honestly in a phase of deglobalization for a variety of reasons, policy and then also geopolitical or conflict. One session I'm really excited about, Feeding the Future. This is talking about global protein demand. So not only how our human consumption of protein is changing, but also the surprising way that it's supporting soybean meal demand. And that's really underpinning record global crush expansion. We'll be hitting on inputs, fertilizer, and then also we have Sunny Westcott, chief meteorologist with Department of Homeland Security and FEMA, joining us to talk about El Nino. Another thing is we have two well-recognized names, one Brian Williams from Macquarie, and then Mike McGlone, who's a senior commodity strategist with Bloomberg. They'll be talking about navigating ag's new reality and how you trade in these situations. And then to end the day, we're going to have Jackie Fatka from Cobank on stage with Jason Miner and myself, and we'll be talking about agriculture moving forward.
It should be a fantastic lineup. I know we'll look forward to being there and having some other folks along as well. Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it. If you want to know more about that conference, you can always look up the AgriNext conference, or it might be easier just to go to NobleAg.com. Susan Stroud, thank you for being with us. Susan Stroud, of course, is with NobleAg.com online. Boris Camilletti now joins us. He's a plant pathologist, field crops here at the U of I. Thanks, Boris, for taking some time with us. As we move through the growing season, it may be important for producers to know and recognize that there's a pretty easy-to-use website called the Crop Protection Network that will allow them to follow, track, and understand maybe when they should actually treat for a series of diseases. Can you tell me about this network? It's called the Crop Protection Network.
Yes, so the Crop Protection Network is a network, it's a website where all the pathologists from different states, we send information we review articles and we put everything there available to farmers and agronomists that might be interested in diseases. Mainly it's in corn, soybean, wheat, and we have some publications also in cotton and alfalfa. So those are also some extra crops. And you have different resources. You may have some fact sheets about diseases in the different crops. We review all those fact sheets every 6 years, so it can be used to get grades. And then you have different tools that have been developed recently that can be used. For instance, you have the crop lookout, where you can see on real time where the diseases are reporting are reported county by county. You have some other tools to predict risk for diseases. So you just put the GPS location, and based on the weather, we'll give you a risk for some diseases. We have diseases in corn like southern rust or GLS or tar spot, which is the most important one. And then we have in soybeans others like white mold, for instance, and there must be other diseases in other crops as well. All the data that we get in Illinois is going to that network, is combined with data from different states. So all the recommendations and what you see on the crop protection network is based or made from a very robust data set.
When you say that they can take a look at the risk, this means return on investment or the ROI? Is that the tool you're talking about? And it will give you what the risk is and what the opportunity is based on actually the price potentially of whatever chemical you're using to treat with.
So we have two different tools. One is the risk for a specific disease based on weather conditions that will assist the farmers in terms of the timing for a fungicide application, for example. And then before that, they can use also the ROI calculator. So based on the predicted disease severity, and the price for the fungicide, for the application, how much you plan to sell your grain, all that goes into this calculator that will give you the benefit per acre of having a fungicide with a different product if there is a benefit. Sometimes there is no return, so it's not convenient to perform the application.
And then on the applications, there are some easy to use functions within this that simply say what part of the growing season are you in, what size is your crop, what stage is it in, and if it's present, do I or don't I spray? That was there for tar spot last year, but I think the southern rust that is now there is brand new.
Yes, so every time we are updating those, it's like sometimes the southern rust is being probably is still not fully deployed in the system. It's still like what we call a beta version that we are testing internally, but hopefully should be out there soon.
So important for folks to go look it up. They can just look up Crop Protection Network. It should pop up in their search, I would think.
Yes, just Google Crop Protection Network and you go directly there. And you can see the directory with all the plant pathologists. And also we have some entomologists there. This is different tabs with different tools that are all for free available for farmers. And is helping our mission, right?
Thank you much, Boris. Boris Camaletti is a plant pathologist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Drew Lerner is here. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, every month of the year, there is a wheat crop that is harvested. And every month of the year, that means that mostly there is a wheat crop that is planted somewhere. I want to talk a lot today about wheat across the planet, but we'll catch the Corn Belt in the United States and Safrina or second crop corn in Brazil along the way as well. Is there anything, and we've not checked in on it for some time, that we should be watching there as they get closer to harvest or in even some places a little bit of harvest.
Yeah, that's right. Brazil is in the process of harvesting some of its early safrinha crops, both corn and cotton. And Brazil is walking into a very wet weather pattern right now. It's going to start raining here tonight. It's going to rain all the way through the first part of next week. We'll take a short-term break, and then we're going to bring more rain in during the latter part of next week into the following weekend. Now, that second round of precipitation may be a little bit more to the south, but current model data suggests that it's still going to impact the safrinha crop country. So the bottom line here is that there's going to be unusually high amounts of moisture in Brazil for this time of the year. This is normally the dry season, and we're talking about rain amounts that are going to be 1 to 3 inches across many of these areas from northern Rio Grande do Sul all the way up to southern Mato Grosso and southern Goiás and on over into Minas Gerais and everybody in between. And this won't just impact safrinha corn harvesting, but also the cotton harvest, and also impact some of the coffee and sugarcane being harvested as well. Some quality issues are going to be raised for some of the cotton in the open bowl stage there. And probably sugarcane is going to lose some sucrose levels because of the wet and bias. And then some of the drying rates for coffee is not going to be great. I don't think we'll have any serious harm to coffee, but nonetheless, it's a wet bias there.
Is there, because South America, of course, opposite of the schedule here in the northern hemisphere, is there any concern, or really, I suppose, if it's rainfall, maybe good production things that are happening, for instance, in Argentina with those overwintering crops like wheat?
You know, for Argentina right now, they're in very, very good shape. They just had a decent rain event that occurred last Thursday through Saturday, and all of the wheat areas picked up on significant amounts of moisture to help support the planting, emergence, and establishment of that crop, not only wheat, but barley, even some winter rapeseed there. And so all of the crops in Argentina are poised to get off to a very good start. Now, they're early in the planting season here. The month of June is the primary month to plant winter crops, at least for wheat and barley. And this rain event was ideal and should set the stage for them to do well. Even in El Nino years, when they get to the spring season, most of the time Argentina has a fairly good spring rainfall pattern.
Let's move northward into Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas. I know some wheat harvest is starting there. They'd like to stay dry now. It's been difficult early on in that growing season for the wheat crop in some parts of that world. And then if you come across through the Delta and the southern part of Illinois, Missouri, and hit the soft red winter wheat growing regions as well, they won't be close to harvest at this time. But I would think if there's rainfall, that might still cause some issues.
Yeah, absolutely. These are good questions there. Certainly in Texas and Oklahoma, we are going to see showers and thunderstorms. In fact, there's not any of those areas you just mentioned that will not see rain over the next week to 10 days, and probably multiple times it will occur in. So the key here is going to be temperatures, because these crops will be rained upon multiple times. And if the temperatures are warm enough, it will quickly dry the crop down between rain events. And that's very, very important when you're at the harvest season. Like you said, it's much better to have no rain rather than to have periodic rain. And I am a little bit concerned about the frequency of rainfall here in some of these areas, and there could very well be at least a few pockets of quality declines because of the wet bias. And the temperatures next week are expected to turn cooler than usual. In fact, they'll start cooling down this weekend in both the plains and the Midwest. And the frequency of rain combined with a little bit of a cooler temperature regime will slow down the drying rates and increase the potential that the head of these wheat crops are going to stay wetter for a longer period of time, which could lead to some germination. So we don't want any head sprouting. At the moment, I think we're doing okay. with quotes around that. There have definitely been pockets of excessive rain recently in Missouri and portions of east central Illinois into west central Indiana, just to name a couple. There are also some areas in Oklahoma and Kansas have had some pretty healthy rains too. So we definitely need to keep an eye on these areas. At the moment, I would say probably not going to see a widespread issue, but pockets for sure.
Is the cooler weather happenstance that it's about 45 days after the last set of cooler weather we have had? Or is it part and correlated with the 45-day consistency that you identified going back to, I think, November of last year?
That's right. Very good memory there. It is that same cycle. It is just absolutely amazing how it has been so consistent since November. The last occurrence was around May 7th. It started April 27th and went to May 7th. So we're 45 days down the road, and here we are going through it again. So I would say the next 10 days will probably be cooler biased across the central part of the United States. Immediately after that, we will warm back up again. And this will impact Canada too, by the way. And we will probably see a boost in rain again once we come out of the cool pattern. So we're going to be rainy going into the coolness. The cool air will kind of suppress some of the precipitation for a little while, but as soon as we start warming back up again, the rain will be back as well.
Anything for the Corn Belt that you want to talk about yet today?
I think the only thing about the Corn Belt is that we are having some rather serious pockets of flooding here recently. I don't think it's impacting the bottom line for the whole country in a big way. But boy, there's a lot of acreage underwater in central Missouri right now, and there's some pockets in other parts of the production region that are suffering from excess moisture too. So this cooler and drier air that may come around next week is going to be very important, I think, because we are going to see more rain immediately after that.
And finally, hopscotch very quickly across the wheat growing regions of the Northern Hemisphere, the Northern Plains, the prairies in Canada, maybe something from Europe.
Okay, well, the Northern U.S. Plains in Canada are doing fairly well right now. Now, I say that knowing full well that just last night we had excessive rains in parts of Manitoba, and we did that also on Sunday. A couple of regions there getting multiple inches of rain causing some flooding, but the bulk of the prairies are in fairly good shape. And I think that will continue to be the case. But it is a slow grow up there this year. The Northern Plains are in better shape than Canada is. Canada is definitely behind the growing curve. And it's probably going to be rainy for a little while, then cooler than normal, and then more rain. So keep an eye on that region for early season frost impacts on immature crops. Over in France, we are very, very dry. Topsoil and subsoil running very short. It is going to be warmer than normal there over the coming week. That's going to present more stress for both wheat and also rapeseed, as well as some of the summer crops. So keep an eye on France. And I think outside of that, most of the former Soviet Union is in pretty good shape. They too are fairly wet, though, and we'll have to keep an eye on them for wet weather disease.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and helped us to wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand at WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.